for the winner by split decision.
It's time for your number one source for mixed martial arts. Mixed martial
arts. Fair. Oh, Jesus.
It is over. Wow.
Breaking down the week's news and results.
Roll call.
Oh, no.
The authority for combat sports.
Want to take a chance and risk getting knocked out.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It is all over.
This is the split decision.
Can he get it here, Mike Nichols? Oh, my God. He's done it.
We have made it another week.
One more week.
One week wiser. Episode 6?
Like I always say, I believe you.
Yeah, but I don't believe myself. That's the problem.
I think it's 6. Maybe 7.
6 or 7. You know, who's counting? Just the listeners.
Obviously you.
Well, I try. You know, because I always want to start off by saying the episode so that if we have to listen back, we can just reference like, oh, when Tonga was on.
Episode 6, right.
Episode, yeah, we could say that. But I can't count well. So what are you going to do? Well, for the new listeners, I am T-Mac.
I'm Turner.
We are doing an MMA podcast. Thank you, first off, for tuning in. What this is more of a conversation, not really your standard, hello, welcome in, here's this guy, blah, 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 blah. We just talk. And this week, we've got a great guest.
Well, and more importantly, a guest that makes sense, because we've been talking about, I guess, health and fighter safety-related issues, like, for the last however many shows we've done.
Yeah, we've had a theme of this fighter safety, what we would change kind of things we've talked about.
And now we've actually brought in a
real doctor.
Who actually knows about it instead of me just speculating.
Right. So do you want to introduce?
You can introduce.
Okay.
You're better at that.
All right. So this is our guest this week, the doctor of really all the MMA fights. It feels like in the Midwest. We have Rance McClain. Rance, how are you doing today?
Doing wonderful, guys. Thanks for having me.
We're excited.
Rance, like I said, you've been it feels like you're the doctor of every MMA event I've ever been to. How many shows have you done, or do you keep track? Do you know?
Oh, my gosh. No, I have no idea how many events I've done. Last few years, probably 35, 40 a year, I would say.
Ooh,
almost every weekend.
Man. And so, here's the thing we've been talking about, and let's just get right into it, because this is kind of the conversation I was wanting to have with you, Rance. We've had a lot of conversations about fighter safety and kind of going along with that, the weight cut. We kind of had a discussion on the weight cut. We'll start with that first. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think the current process is something that is okay, or would there be anything that you would change with how fighters are making weight and kind of the whole process of, you know, putting an IV as soon as they win, all that stuff?
Right. I think we are pushing the envelope of what's possible right now with weight cuts, or a lot of fighters are. I say we because, you know, I'm evaluating them and taking care of them. The science behind cutting weight has exploded in probably the last 10 to 15 years especially, and people are just figuring out and calculating out exactly where they need to be at certain points in a timeline, and then the amount that they're able to dehydrate right at the end to make weight, we see that getting more and more. And the more dehydrated that a fighter gets in order to make a specific weight cutoff, the more they're putting themselves at risk, both for problems while they are dehydrated at the weigh-in, but also it's my belief that even the next day, since a lot of the, if we're talking about professional bouts, a lot of them are weighing in the day before, and there's some concern about exactly how much they can safely rehydrate the next day and how that's going to affect their performance. So, putting it quickly, I'm very concerned about fighters and weight cuts.
Here's my question, and I made this speculation just using no science or anything. I just made it up in my mind. How bad is it to, you know, like you said, 24 hours, you know, before the weigh-ins or day of, to completely you know, dehydrate your body, you know, to basically taking all the water out of your body, and then in the same day rehydrating to the degree that these guys do. Is that, I feel like that shouldn't, your body shouldn't, it shouldn't be okay to make those crazy, you know, 30 minutes ago you didn't have a single drop of water in your body, now you're rehydrating to a crazy degree. I mean, is there anything medically wrong with that, I guess?
Right. Well, you know, and again, that gets into, there's two different issues that you need to look at with what we call rapid weight loss or rapid dehydration, particularly for athletic competition. And one is that time period when you've lost the weight, or when you've lost all that water weight. It's going to change how your body functions. Simple things like your respiratory rate, your heart rate, your blood pressure, there's changes in those that are occurring. You're taking your blood volume and dropping it down. So your blood pressure starts to get lower and lower. Your body tries to accommodate for that by increasing the heart rate. So you're getting less blood to the organs of the body, particularly looking at the functioning heart, the lungs, the brain. It's trying to shunt blood away from the non-life-sustaining organ systems and keep it in the places where you're going to maintain a heartbeat and respiration and your thought process. By doing that, it's putting more and more stress on the heart. One of the other things that we look at is how the heart itself is beating, and one of the big concerns with dehydration is that it actually changes the electrophysiology of the heart, or how the heart depolarizes and repolarizes, and it puts you at an increased risk for arrhythmias. That has particularly of late been brought into question with MMA, because we've had a couple of MMA athletes who actually died from cardiac arrhythmias. And it's very difficult to tease out, were they cutting weight for something, or was this an underlying physiologic problem with the heart? There's a lot of overlap that it could have been a little bit of both. And so during that acute period when you're dehydrated, it can be, if you're dehydrated significantly enough, yeah, it can be deadly during that acute phase. Then you get into the concerns with performance and health issues with rehydration. When you dehydrate to that extent and you rehydrate, you know, sometimes we see fighters, you know, 30, 35 pounds of rehydration the next night. And they're getting that weight back on, but the body can only absorb so much of that fluid, and a lot of it is pushed out, what we call third spacing, or pushed out in between the cells and not getting into the cells themselves. So you've regained all the weight, but it's not a physiologic regaining of the weight. So you're technically not dehydrated because you're back at your pre-dehydration weight, but the water's not in the right place, and so your performance will suffer.
Well, with the weight cut issue itself, you know, we had talked about this, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and one thing that we were talking about is maybe making fighters weigh in the day of. And I know in Kansas, if it's an all amateur card, they have to weigh in the day of. Is that something you're in favor of, or what would be your change, you know, to make it a, I guess, healthier sport?
Sure. There's a lot of, a lot of debate on what the best approach would be. For instance, having same-day weigh-ins, because that would discourage more severe dehydration weight loss. There's also, there's different organizations look at getting certified weights for fighters and saying, okay, you know, you are at X percent body fat, and so that means your total body volume of water is this much in pounds, say it's, 70 or 80 pounds, and you're only allowed to lose 10% of that, or 7 or 8 pounds of dehydration weight loss. It's something that there's no perfect system that's going to completely protect fighters, because as time will tell, there's always going to be a way to push the envelope within the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so any one of those, there's going to be people, you know, if you're weighing in the morning of an evening fight, then people are more likely still to dehydrate, but there's more and more people are going to push for IVs, which currently there's fighters that are getting IVs, but a lot of them aren't, and they're just trying to do oral rehydration. So you're going to increase the risk to their health by giving them IVs. People that don't know what they're doing with IVs, you can easily transmit bacteria on the skin down into the blood and become very sick, and it's what's called sepsis or blood infection, and that can have severe consequences on your health too. So there's always going to be concerns no matter how we do the weigh-ins, as far as, you know, people are going to, again, try to push the limits, and then you're going to have a few bad outcomes.
Do you think there would be a significant increase in overall performance from the athletes if we did move to maybe a same-day weigh-in, wrestling style, where guys are still cutting weight, but it's significantly less amount of weight in a shorter period of time? Do you think that would maybe increase the level of performance from the athletes?
I absolutely do. I mean, there's studies out there that have looked at athletic performance and dehydration. And athletic performance starts to fall off at a 2% body weight loss. So a 200-pound fighter, if they lose 4 pounds of water weight, their performance starts to suffer. Once you get up to about 5%, the decrease drops to about a 30% reduction in capacity for athletic performance or physical work. So it's a very rapid decrease in performance. If you told a fighter that, hey, you know, even though you're rehydrated, not all of that is getting into the muscles, and you're still essentially 5% or 8% dehydrated the next day when you step into the cage, that's why you see a lot of those fighters that you can look at them and see that they had a really tough weight cut, and you know they're going to suffer the next night, and they're not going to perform the way they should, even though they've rehydrated.
Now, stepping into the cage as far as the fighters go, I just read a study, I want to say maybe a week ago, where a study came out that said all fighters suffer from at least 30% brain trauma by being a professional MMA fighter. Now, you've done, and I'm not even sure if that's correct, I think I just remember saying that, but I remember you were doing a study maybe a year ago, is that correct?
Uh-huh.
With the fight. Tell us a little bit about what you found and kind of the information you got.
Right. We were, the purpose of the study we were doing was trying to increase our ability to look for things that can be signals that somebody had a concussion or received, enough concussive forces that maybe they felt okay, but trying to identify some of those subtle changes that can occur with concussions or mild traumatic brain injury, and pick those up to then be able to better advise athletes and fighters on what their proper recovery and return to competition is. Things that we really worry about with concussive forces is that period after you're more likely to get another concussion, and that other concussion, even though it may be, you know, a mild trauma that produced it, can have deadly consequences. There's a condition called second impact syndrome, where even a mild second concussion can cause rapid swelling of the brain, and the brain basically gets trapped within the skull, and you have a high incidence of death when that happens. So we were trying to identify by using some tests that have been used a little bit before, but not specifically for MMA, to try to identify fighters with concussions. Unfortunately, our data, we just didn't have enough significance to the data to be able to say whether or not the test really accurately predicted that they'd had a concussion.
Do you think moving forward, you know, the more popular the sport becomes, obviously I'm assuming we'll start seeing some studies like you were talking about. A question that I always have and that I ask people but that aren't doctors and don't know, so that I never get a real answer, is people say that from a concussion and a brain trauma standpoint that professional football or boxing, a sport where it's multiple head traumas, you know, throughout the match or the game or whatever it is significantly worse than maybe the crazy trauma, you know, once every couple months from a head kick or, you know, or whatever it might be in an MMA fight. Is that, I mean, I'm sure that's true, but is there scientific evidence to back up the notion of, you know, maybe one extreme trauma is better than, you know, thousands of smaller traumas over time?
Yes, to a point. The amount of damage that can come if you suffer a severe concussive blow, a bad concussion, can be significant and permanent. So we never discount that. And you see that in all types of athletes, in football players, in boxers, MMA participants, you know, fighters that suffer a really that they never quite perform the same way. So we never, you know, discount one severe episode. On the other hand, you do have to look at the cumulative effect, and that there's a good studies that show that the repetitive low-level impacts mm-hmm. can have more long-term effects. Because people, the problem is people don't see those as being a problem because they never had that big concussive blow and a lot of the symptoms. But the symptoms can slowly creep up over time. There's a good study on NFL linemen, and they've also kind of replicated it in some studies on college football on the linemen, and they were worse off because of play after play after play, they were crashing into the other linemen, and that those blows over time added up to more significant damage to the running back, who may get a much bigger hit, but maybe only three or four big hits in a game. Mm-hmm. So that's always kind of been the underlying thought process in combat sports, was, well, boxers are training boxing and taking, you know, low-level concussive blows day in and day out in training, and then more repetitive blows to the head during competition, whereas an MMA fighter may train stand-up one day or one session, but then they're grappling and maybe don't have those concussive forces that occur to the head, or that they're training jiu-jitsu, or they're doing some other, you know, cardio or something, because there's a little more of that cross-training effect that maybe they're going to show that in the long run, the cumulative traumatic problems are less than MMA. Unfortunately, right now, we just don't have those longitudinal studies because MMA really has, you know, exploded the last, you know, 7 to 10 years. And so we're just now getting into the first wave of people who had trained and competed for a long time that are now in that retirement age and not into that later in life period yet, where we don't know what, you know, what their findings are going to be.
Gotcha. What I want to clarify something earlier. I said about that study. I just found it while we were talking. The study claims that a third of all MMA fights end in a concussion. So that's what I was trying to reference earlier.
I did a different research study just on MMA injuries and prevalence and incident and what kind of injuries, and it is. It's been accepted for publication. It should be coming out in the next couple of months in the Clinical Journal of Sports Medicine.
Check you out.
My data doesn't support that claim. Without pulling it up right now, and I don't have it with me, I can't remember what the exact rate was, but mine was definitely not up at 30%. In fact, the overall injury rate was less than 10%. And my injury rates were lower than previous studies. One of the things that we attribute that to is all of my data was collected after the unified rules went into effect.
Mm-hmm.
And unified rules, one of the aspects of those was to help protect fighters from injury. So, you know, kind of a standardization of the rules, and that, you know, that's one of the things I spoke to in the article, is that we really feel like that is having an effect on injury rates, and also, you know, looking at the traumatic impact of concussion.
Gotcha. Well, we've been talking a lot about kind of the concussions and the weight loss and all the kind of gruesome things, you know, because we've mentioned some big words here that could be really, you know, scary to talk about. But one thing I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, your cage side at every one of these events, what fights stand out to you of all the, you know, 45 shows a year you do? What's some of the fights that you think of like, man, that was so cool that I was cage side for this one?
Oh, man.
That's a tough one.
So many. Yeah, that is. You know, one of the things that I constantly talk to people about, and, you know, a lot of people just don't understand the sport. And the ones that stand out to me are the ones that you can just tell so much effort was put into matchmaking. Because any, you know, one-on-one competitive sport, it's all about the matchup. And there are shows that, you know, sometimes it catches you out of nowhere. You don't think that overall it's going to be a really well-matched show. But then by the end of the night, you say, wow, there were, you know, six fights that went to decision. There were other fights that really went back and forth. So I look at it more from the totality of a night than a match-by-match basis. You know, I talk to a lot of people that, you know, they're very leery of MMA in general, and then you broach the subject of women's MMA, and they really throws them off, that they say, you know, that's just not ladylike. Women shouldn't be doing this. And I defend it by saying, quite often, the best shows that I'll do for months at a time are shows like the Invicta shows, where the women, because a lot of the women don't have the same knockout power that a lot of the men do. It's just, you know, it's a fact that we showed in our study too, that TKOs and KOs just don't happen nearly as much in women's events, that they tend to be better matchups and more technical fights. And I think almost a more true representation of what we are going to see in 10 or 15 years across the board in MMA, when we have people who have trained for 10 or 15 years from a young age in all the different disciplines. And so those are the things that get me excited, is when I see just any really good matchup, you know, see people that really, you know, the fight could go either way at any time.
Here's something I want to ask you, because we've talked about this a couple times on the show. People who don't train, or maybe are less educated in the sport, talk about, you hear it all the time, if you go to any show, someone gets dropped or hurt with a body shot, like a liver shot, and people will, you know, freak out and say, you know, how did he get dropped with that body shot, you know? And I love hearing it, because I've been hit with some disgusting liver shots from James Krause, and I always try to explain to people, it's just, if you haven't been struck in the liver, you don't understand how it changes your life, and when you have trauma to your liver, is that something that, you know, like, if you, I'm doing a really, really bad job of asking this question, but like, you know, if you get hit with a kick to the head and you get knocked out, you know, it shuts your lights off, it shuts your body off, you know, all of that happens and you can't control it.
Yeah.
Like, when you get hit in the liver, it has the same effects, kind of. like your body gets shut down because it, I think the liver is important probably in your body. But is there is what I'm asking is it bad when James Krause hits me in the liver? Should I tell him to stop doing that?
Well, I, first and foremost,
because if you say it on here,
is bad.
Yeah, if you say it on here, he'll have to not stop doing it
for damage.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, some of the things that you look at, particularly with things like the liver shot, the liver sets right up in under the diaphragm, and so any pressure is immediately going to transmit that force up into the diaphragm. So that's why you see a lot of guys, when they take a really hard liver shot, it's almost like getting the wind knocked out of them too.
Yep.
So you have that pain from the actual trauma into the liver, and then you also have that combined in with I can't breathe.
Right.
Other things, that you have to keep in mind is, the liver lies up in under the ribs. And so when you're getting a liver shot, it transmits forces out into the ribs. Ribs are very painful when the ribs move more than what they would like to. So there's lots of different things that go into that and why that is such a debilitating blow to somebody. The liver as you can bruise the liver, have bleeding into the liver with a really hard shot. Fortunately, because the liver is up in under the ribs, it does protect it from that massive shock wave that you were really concerned about somebody having, some internal bleeding or something like that. That's usually more from, really high velocity stuff like a car accident.
Right, right.
Well, Rance, man, this has just been amazing. We've had such a great time talking to you. We know you're busy. We know we won't keep up, or I should say take up, any more of your time. Before we let you go, though, is there anything you want to plug? I mean, you had mentioned that study that's coming out in a couple months. Anything, that related, or any Twitter handles, any fun stuff
any we Twitter
can,
handles?
Yeah, that we can follow you
trying
at.
To get more followers.
You know what? Nah, it's all good. I've done this for years. I have no agendas I'm trying to promote, nothing I'm trying to promote, other than just I'm out there for the athletes and it's doing something that I love and helping guys and gals out, in the fight game. It's just always been, near and dear to me. Everybody's like family, so I'm more about promoting the local fighters and the local shows and trying to get people to get out and support these events, because the fans supporting the events allows the events to happen. When the events happen, then I get to come out and have fun with everybody else.
What's the next show you're working?
Oh, my gosh. I got several of them coming up. I think I have next weekend off, and then I think I have KCFA coming up in April. I just found out, I guess Titan was going to be in Oklahoma, but they're coming back to Kansas mm-hmm. City instead, so I'm assuming I'll be sitting cage side there. There's a boxing at the Holiday Inn. I think there's a couple different boxing shows coming up that I'm working, so...
That is awesome. Well, we'll have to have you on, especially when that study comes out. Let us know when that study comes out and is published. I'd like to, for you to be back on and kind of we'll dig deep into what you found and all that fun stuff.
No problem. I'll be back anytime. Just let me know, guys.
Appreciate awesome. It. Thanks, Rance. All appreciate right. it.
You
have
a good one.
Have a great day. Yep. Bye-bye.
Well, that was cool.
God, that was awesome. He just dropped knowledge.
Can I tell you, there was a couple times, though, when he was using those, like, really big, like, medical terms. I was like, I have no idea what that is. Yeah. I'm hoping he explains. And he did.
Yeah,
but I was just like, oh, God, I don't know what that is. But
I think he really did a good job of giving us the actual scientific side of the things that we're things that I've just been going, yeah, and I think the science.
And this would say, because, science would obviously say that. We're going to have to reference that interview every time we're moving forward. Oh, man, that was really good. It was really awesome. And I liked his theories, I guess you could say, on the whole weight cutting thing.
You know? I think that he did a really good job of, like I said, I mean, all the things that we talked about, you know, and then backing it up with, this is actually how your body is affected by, extreme weight cutting and dehydration. And
I just hope that, you know, now that you're starting to see the doctors, the, you know, ringside physicians, those type of people are saying like, hey, look, there's better ways we can do this.
Right.
It's, I don't know, I guess I'm not rewarding or it's uplifting. It's good to see that we're trying to move forward because, right, you know, the stigma is always going to be it's violent, which it is. I mean, at the end of the day,
right,
they're punching, kicking and choking each other.
Right.
But it's, you know, the best sport in the world to me.
Yeah.
And so, but it's just good to see that there's people out there that are like, hey, this is an amazing sport, but let's make it better by keeping these athletes healthier. So,
well, and Rance really alluded to it. You know, he talked about how, you know, the MMA has just blown up in the last 7 to 10 years, and we haven't had enough time to kind of gather data, I guess, on things like weight cutting and concussions and trauma and all that. So I think you'll see moving forward, they'll start studying athletes. It sounds like Rance is already doing some of that, and I'm sure there's other people out there who are starting to study the athletes. And why do I keep saying athletes?
Because they are athletes.
I know, but it just sounds weird.
We'll say fighters.
I don't want to say fighters. Athletes just sounds weird. But I think moving forward, they'll find ways to make it safer for the fighters' longevity after fighting. Mm.
Yeah, because like I said, you know, this is a violent sport. This isn't curling. This isn't, you know, push a ball and see how far it goes.
Curling is great.
Curling is great. I do like watching it. But this isn't that.
No, this is not that.
This is, you know, you're never going to make anything 100% safe when you're trying to inflict pain on the other person. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So, but like I said, it's just really cool to see that there's people working to make the sport better, evolve the sport. Because, you know, we've talked about it, obviously, almost to death, about just there needs to be better things done. And now we have real professionals.
Well, and I think you're even starting to see it in the NFL. I mean, the NFL's been around for years and years and years, and they're just now starting to find ways to, you know, make the players safer and
new helmets and all that stuff.
And,
yeah,
you know, they have a players' association that's doing concussion studies all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like he said, I mean, we're just now getting the first round of guys who are at retirement age. We don't really have any guys that have been in the sport for, you know, or had been in the sport for 20 years and are now 60, 70. I mean, we're getting, you know, we're going to get to that point in the next, you know, 10 or 15 years. And then that's when we'll be able to see if the trauma adds up and if it's really as bad as
what people
as
think.
As they say it is.
Right. Well, transitioning.
Let's transition.
Yeah, there's been a lot of MMA that's been going on. Actually, more so combat sports because the event I think that everyone's talking about, at least what I'm noticing, is Cyborg.
Lion fights, yeah.
Yeah, Lion fight. And Cyborg losing her Muay Thai fight. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, I mean,
Were you surprised?
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I wasn't surprised. I think that Cyborg is good. First of all, Cyborg is good at everything.
Right.
So Cyborg's striking is great. She's obviously, you know, great on the ground. She's big. She's strong. When you're in a Thai fight, you know, you take a lot of that out. Not all that comes into play. So, I mean, she fought a very, 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 very good striker. You know, a girl that had lots of experience it's what she does. She does Muay Thai, and first of all, Cyborg has a chin.
Definitely
is tough,
right?
And she took some shots, and I think it was I think it was a good fight. I mean, you know, she definitely lost and ate some shots, but you know,
I was actually shocked, and not from the standpoint of a Muay Thai world class striker beat Cyborg.
Right.
It was. Man, Cyborg looked like untouchable.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
for so long.
Right.
And it was just shocking to see, like, wow. Because I thought if Cyborg was going to lose, it was going to be some Muay Thai 1-2 head kick something that knocks her out. Oh my God. The technique of this woman has just outclassed the just brute strength of Cyborg.
Right.
Okay. And that's kind of what happened. But man, it was just weird to see for such a sustained long period of time, like Cyborg losing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the only shocking part I was,
right,
or that I saw. But then I started doing research because I don't know women's Muay Thai that much. I just don't.
Yeah, certainly.
And then once you started like researching who she fought, I'm like, okay, maybe I was the dumb one not knowing who she was fighting.
Right. And if they're in an MMA fight and Cyborg gets on top, it's going to, you're stepping into her world.
I mean, do you think that hurts? But do you think that loss hurts her stock with the Ronda Rousey fight that everyone wants?
It'd be like if Ben Henderson lost in a wrestling match to Jordan Burroughs.
Mm-hmm.
They're not gonna go, well, you're not the number one contender anymore because you lost to Jordan Burroughs in a wrestling match.
Yeah.
So I don't think so. I think if anything, it actually made me, and I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but I respected Cyborg for it. I mean, she stepped into to that world and is becoming active and staying active in the sport, whether it's MMA or kickboxing or whatever it is. So I actually respected her for it.
Right, and I think what I actually respected a lot more than her, and I do respect her a lot.
Oh, certainly.
Way, but the promotion for actually saying, like, hey, Cyborg, you're probably our biggest star of this night on this event, but we're going to put you in there with someone real.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times...
Well, I'm sure she wanted that, too.
Well, of course. As a competitor, that's what you'd hope for. But you always see these promotions trying to make their name by using a big star and hoping that that star gets the win. And then it's, hey, they're going to come back. And remember, it's Lion Fights. You know, and I'm using that in this example. But Lion Fights was like, no, we're going to put her in there with someone real.
Yeah.
And so it was just good because, you know... transitioning to another event that happened last night, the World Series of Fighting, which I absolutely hate. I hate the World Series of Fighting. Well, one, kind of alluding to the Lion Fights, there's so many one-sided ass whippings on all of these cards that it's like, guys, get your shit together. You know,
yeah.
I come from, you know, my background, I guess you could say, in this whole thing is pro wrestling. So I get make stars, right?
That's what they're doing.
You got to groom some people. But God damn, man, some of these fights, it's like, well, what the? No, this shouldn't even happen.
Well, I think what their mindset is, or at least what it looks like, is they don't want to get typecast in the Bellator world, or what Bellator is doing, where they have four stars and those four stars fight each other, a bunch of times. So like you look at the fights last night and you're like, man, I'd love to see, you know, Paul Harris versus Yushin Okami, you know, whatever it is. I mean, whoever,
John Fitch.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess Yushin's an 85er, but, I think they're waiting to build some names. And then, you know, you'll start seeing the kind of emerging stars, I guess, or the guys that everyone knows, you know, will start fighting each other. But at the same time, it's like, you know, the whole not point, but the great thing about, I'll say, regional shows or the regional circuit is, you know, a guy like Dakota Cochran gets to fight a guy like Jamie Varner.
Right.
And he beats a guy like Jamie Varner. Mm-hmm. You know, no one knew who Dakota Cochran was outside of the
Nebraska,
Midwest or Nebraska. Yeah. And he comes in and beats Jamie Varner on Titan. And, you know, if Jamie Varner only got, you know, only had to fight other, you know, vets or whoever, mm-hmm. you know, the allure of it is kind of taken away. Having some of those 10-0 guys, those prospects, get to step up and try to make their name off of, you know, some of the veterans, I think is really a really cool part about it.
And I'm okay with that, those type of fights.
Right.
But it just seemed like to me, when you do the whole card that way, mm-hmm. that's when it's like, okay, guys, let's use that example. The Dakota Cochran Jamie Varner fight. First off, Dakota Cochran's amazing fighter.
Yeah,
and people I don't think just realize that,
right.
including Jamie Varner. I think he kind of took him a little, you know, didn't really prepare, and it was a last second fight. Anyhow, but that example or that fight doesn't happen a lot. It's typically the Yushin Okami fight that we saw last night where he just, I'm Yushin Okami, I'm one of the world's best, and instead of fighting another world's best, I'm going to fight a good guy, but completely dominate him. And it's just, I don't know, I read a Facebook status from Joe Wooster who said he literally threw a towel at the TV because of so many one-sided fights.
Yeah.
And it's like, I understand if Joe Wooster gets upset because this is his profession. Matchmaking is his profession.
He
probably knows every fighter in every state and even, you know, all of that stuff. So when he gets upset, it's like, okay. But when I'm getting upset, I'm a hardcore fan,
right?
But I don't know everyone. And, but when I look at it and I go, no, this is stupid.
Yeah.
And it's just, they're just doing that a lot. And I hope what you're saying, where eventually now we're getting stars and now we want to see fights of these stars that we've made. But what I've always been a fan of for promotions, I don't care if it's a 6-6 guy versus a 7-8 guy. If they go
fight,
I'll watch them fight again.
I don't care.
I mean, obviously I care when it gets to championship fights, like who's good and who's not. But my thing is, if you put on great fights,
I'll tune in.
From what I've been hearing
about World Series of Fighting is they're writing some big checks to their fighters, to the big name guys that, that we were just talking about. So I'm wondering if maybe they're getting a little top heavy with their pocketbook, paying the top guys, and that's the reason why they're bringing in a lot of the prospects to fight those guys, because those are the only guys that they, you know, that they can afford, or you know, they can't afford to pay another guy to come in because of the outlandish checks that they're writing. Josh Berkman and John Fitch and all those
Yushin Okami.
Yushin Okami.
I just think
Tyrone Sprong.
And it's no disrespect to Yushin Okami. Look, if you're gonna pay me, and I'm making these numbers up, if you're gonna pay me, you know, $75,000 to fight this bum bum. Okay, cool, I'll do it. It's not his fault at all. But it just seems like if you're wanting to build, like, to me, if you're wanting to build a solid promotion, you should be focusing in on great fights rather than great stars, I guess, is my thing. It's because if I know you, for example, let's just say Diego Sanchez gets cut from the UFC and signs with World Series of Fighting.
Right.
Awesome. He's a fun fighter to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But if I see him fight two lower level guys,
well,
I don't care about the third fight because most likely it's going to be a lower level guy. Now, if that fight turns into something, I'll tune back in on his fourth fight. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, well, you're signing all these big name guys, but they're not fighting anyone, so I don't care. And so I've never been a fan of World Series of Fighting, and this is my little rant about them.
I like that.
I hate I hate World Series of Fighting. They're the worst big time promotion, in my opinion.
Damn.
Their NBC's production of their shows suck. Andre Arlovsky still to this day irritates me when he wore UFC gloves to his fight with, I think it was Anthony Johnson. He's wearing UFC gloves.
Yeah.
What the fuck? And it's just Boss Rutten and Todd Harris, they're not good. I'm a fan of Boss Rutten. I think he's fun.
Yeah.
I think he sucks as a commentator. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Todd Harris said Tyler Stinson was a newcomer last night. Did you realize that?
I didn't even notice
it's
that.
Like, guys, do your fucking research.
A newcomer. He's got 40 pro fights.
Yeah. I get it if Goldberg and Rogan mess up, because they were doing three shows a month almost.
Right.
Hey, there's one guy on the second fight of the night on the prelims. I said he was, 13-0.
They were saying he was a World Series of Fighting newcomer or a...
I think they were just saying he was a newcomer from what I understood.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
Now, even if he's a World Series of
Fighting... Which is not true, because he's... Oh, no?
This is his second... that was his second fight
was
with
it?
The promotion.
Okay.
But still, Yushin Okami's a World Series of Fighting newcomer, too. But you know what I mean? It's just... Do your research, guys.
Right.
You do one show every other month.
Well, and it's so weird, because I think that with the commentary and just the show in general is you're... When you're on CBS and all that, or and they're on NBC, you're trying to cater your show to, and I love it, the casual fan,
the running theme.
So saying that, throwing in stuff like, oh, he's a World Series of Fighting newcomer, it establishes credibility for your promotion. Like he's just now made it to World Series of Fighting. You know what I mean? He's finally made it to World Series of Fighting, And so I think that a lot of that is just if the really good commentators to me are the guys who are super educated, and it's almost if you're not educated, it's super boring because you all you hear them talk about is MMA or like what's going on or what's happening or what this guy's good at. So you almost have to have the guy who's like the hype man, like the Goldberg, like he just
he's
like
into
he's into it, he's saying stuff, and You know, if you had two guys like, if you had two Joe Rogans who were just so knowledgeable, you know, the casual fan would just be like, I don't want to, you know, they'd probably mute it. I don't want to listen to this guy talk. I want to see someone get knocked the fuck out.
Right. Yeah, they're getting too involved.
Right.
And my thing is there's a lot of, promotions that are on, that have TV deals. Where their commentating team, they're not big expert guys, but they have a great conversation telling a story of a fight. That's all I want.
Right.
Now, obviously, I want you to be knowledgeable. If you're saying it's an armbar and they're doing a rear naked choke, I'm going to be a little irritated.
Right.
But if you don't know the electric chair sweep, okay, I don't either. I'm not huge into you being so technical and telling me about mission control and all this stuff. Just two guys having a great conversation telling me about two guys that I might not know about, or even if I do, telling me their story.
Yeah. Why I really like Joe Rogan, I watched Eddie Bravo versus Hoyler Gracie from last night, and Kenny Florian commentated that the Metamoris, was it like grappling event? I don't know.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu event?
Yeah, I would say grappling event. But.
And what I really like about, and Joe Rogan does a really good job of it too, is in some of the grappling positions and exchanges saying, you know, fighter A, you know, he's in half guard right now. What he's trying to get, what he needs to do is get an underhook. He's going to try to get that underhook, you know. And I think that helps people, who are watching who might not know, might not know what's going on. You know, why does he have his two legs wrapped around that guy's one? You know, and I think it helps educate people more than anything. So next time when they see that position, like, I remember my dad first started watching MMA, like he would, just from watching and hearing, the commentators talk, he'd go, oh yeah, now he's got that guy's back, or he's got his hooks in. He'd start like using the lingo because he had heard, the commentators talk about it. So I think it's good when you have an educated guy who can, like you said, have a conversation, tell you what's happening, tell you the story of what's going on.
Right. And really what World Series of Fighting does for me is just make me realize how great Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg are.
Oh, yeah.
They catch a lot of shit. And look, they've done, 200 shows
they're gonna
now?
They're going to mess up.
Yeah. So if you make a little MySpace. If you make a YouTube, that's what I'm going to say.
A MySpace account.
Yeah. But if you make a YouTube video of all of Goldberg's stupid sayings, you're going to have a 10-minute video because he's done so many events, he's going to mess up. But, man, even if you put Brian Stan and John Anik.
Yeah. I think Anik's good.
I think Anik's great.
I think he's good.
I think, is he a little vanilla? Can he be a little boring? Yeah, but he's not. Look, the fight should be the one entertaining you. These guys should just not irritate you. That's been my thing.
Yeah.
Just don't have these assholes distract me. And that's what they did last night. Boss Rutan not saying he doesn't know what's going on.
They'll get off topic and start having a conversation in the middle of the,
it's like. You're not having a conversation about the fight. You're having a conversation of when Boss Rutan won the UFC title at UFC 11 or
that's
whatever.
That's one of the things that drives me crazy. And I watched the RFA stream when William Joplin fought
Cody Land?
Chad Obermiller.
Oh, Chad Obermiller.
This is the last one, and they had it was awesome. They had a stream, but they had Jens Pulver, and I don't know who the other gentleman was. But all this guy did, and they did a really, really terrible job. I mean, I love Jens Pulver.
Oh, yeah, he's a great guy.
Fantastic. Terrible, terrible, terrible play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
Well, all this guy did, it was like he was there to just remind you every 10 seconds that Jens Pulver was the first ever UFC lightweight champion.
Yeah.
And he just stroked him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just at every turn, he was like, and, legend, UFC Hall of Fame or blah, blah, blah. And just like, dude, stop. Like, we all know who Jens Pulver is.
Yeah, so Spider A has Spider B hurt. What would you do, UFC legend and first-time lightweight champion Jens Pulver? What would you do in this situation? Well, fuck, I would get up. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, whenever they pull, their names up on the screen, the camera, he had, UFC Hall of Famer, first time UFC lightweight. It had the longest thing on his name.
You know who called the very first RFA?
JJ Ozone and Titan T-Mac. Huh?
Yes, we called it. Have I ever told you the story of what happened during the main event?
No, you haven't.
Okay, so Tim Elliott was fighting Jens Pulver.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and throughout the night, there is a fat Amazon. Well, I won't go anymore.
Oh, Jesus,
just the worst type of drunk fat person ever.
She's just sloppy.
It's sloppy, just ugh, right.
Ugh.
And she was irritating the entire night, yelling behind us, just kill him, you know, beat his ass, sea bass, you know, just the stupidest things ever. And so it's time for the main event, and we're calling it, and I believe it was like middle of the first round. This fat bitch comes up behind me and puts me in a rear naked choke
while you're live.
While the fight is going on. Oh my God, I had to drop the mic. I looked at Ozone. Ozone starts like doing his like laughing. Yeah. You know, he's not laughing in the mic, but he's looking at me like pointing, like laughing silently. And she drags me off my chair. I was sitting on a stool. She drags me off the chair, and I'm like literally hitting her, like not hitting her hard, but like smacking her arm, like hey. Right. And security had to grab her.
Did
and
you tap?
Oh, I should have. Yeah.
Did you let go?
Yeah. Tap. I would have tapped if it would have let her. I don't know. I honestly don't think she knew what she was doing,
right.
And it was just the worst. But it was a fun night to call. That was actually my one and only event that I had called, and it is very hard.
Oh, it's tough. It's a tough job.
Now, I had 8 hours to prepare because we found out last minute, but
right.
Todd Harris and Boss Rutten, I imagine, had a little bit more time than me.
Well, the problem is you have to – it's just like – you've had a radio show. You're a radio mm-hmm. guy. The you have to have – like Mike Goldberg does such a good job of like being the filler guy
mm-hmm.
where he can keep the conversation
yeah.
going about nothing. You know, and in radio, you kind of run into that too. And you,
right.
know, you kind of have to keep the conversation going. And when you have a guy like, and I think Goldberg is great
mm-hmm.
at doing that, you know, he can almost keep you interested by talking about nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, because how many times have there been rounds where the only thing that's happened is four punches and now they're up against the cage
right.
and one guy's working for a takedown? Man, you got to come up with content to like,
oh yeah,
all right, the guy's still working for this takedown. You
yeah.
can't say that.
And what he does that's really good is, you know, in a position like that, he'll go, you know, now what does fighter A need to do here, Joe,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get out of this, you know, and like that's really, I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what, you know, really educates people and kind of makes you hate the position less, I guess, when
right.
you start to understand, like,
yeah.
like it, yeah, it's really hard to hold someone on the fence, you know,
mm-hmm.
like,
yeah.
it's hard to
yeah.
do that, you know?
Definitely. So, I guess to round out my point, fuck World Series of
yeah,
Fighting.
Yeah, that was...
I hate them, but...
Really got off on that World Series of Fighting tangent.
Yeah, I know, but they just irritate me. I just don't like them. There's so many other promotions that do such a better job
yeah.
than what they do, and for people to perceive them as, like, a top five organization... They just because they have money.
They got money.
They got
money.
But so what? Who cares? Ugh.
The
show sucks.
Did you watch Eddie Bravo last night?
I did not.
You need to. It was amazing.
I know. I read a lot about it on my Twitter timeline because obviously the people I'm following are going to be into that.
Yeah, watching it.
Yeah. And so I read that it was amazing. Now, you watched it.
I did.
And now
I watched it this morning.
Right. Now, tell me, you said that they were talking during their grappling match.
It was bizarre. So, I mean, it started, you know, it's a 120-minute round, submission only.
No points.
No points, submission
okay.
only. There's no submissions, ends in a draw.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they had so many great scrambles and, you know, grappling exchanges, I guess, where Eddie hit a really nice sweep kind of early on in the match. But towards the end, Eddie had him in lockdown, which is a 10th planet move, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and he rolled through for this calf cutter. Well, they both had, like, they were both laying on their backs almost like side by side next to each other working calf cutters. And their faces were like, you know, a foot apart. So like, and Eddie is cranking on this guy. Like, it was nasty. Like the crowd's going crazy. It was so loud. You know, they were in LA. Like it was the historic rematch. And Hoyler's like laughing. And he was in pain. You know,
mm-hmm.
it was almost like a, you know, they could both see the clock. There was like 2 minutes left. You know, it's a position that they're probably going to finish the round in. They're not going to, you know, get out of it. And I think he knew that neither one of them were going to tap to the calf cutter. You know, so it was just kind of like, hey, let's just crank on each other's legs and then like let this time run out. And so the crowd started going crazy and he was laughing, and it was bizarre. And then they got up and hugged, and it was cool. It was a cool moment. That's
now
two,
obviously
two of the best.
Now obviously there's no point system. That's what
right.
we talked about. But everyone's always going to look at something, and if it's not, if there's no decisive winner, they're going to say, hey, this guy won or that guy won.
Right.
So in your opinion, who won that?
I think Eddie Bravo did. I mean, it was there was times during the match where. Eddie was, you know, in dominant position and in control. He had a sweep. He passed. I mean, he did a lot of good things. He had some good submission attempts. You know, but there was times where he was on his back too, and he was in half guard for probably the first 5 minutes of the match. He was, you know, it was kind of the half guard battle of Hoyler trying to pass,
mm-hmm.
And Eddie trying to keep him in half guard. So it was, I would say Eddie won. He had the more
advantage. Eddie.
He had them. Yeah. He had the more close submission attempts. He had the sweep was really big, and I think he just did more offensively. And sometimes it's hard. I mean, I was talking to Krauss about this the other day. You know, sometimes when you put like super super high level grapplers together, they're so good that like you might see him stay in half guard the entire time,
because right.
It's like, you know, someone will pull half guard and it's like, you know, this guy is so good that I can't get out of his half guard. I can't pass, mm-hmm. and if I do, I know I'm just going back to it. But they had so many scrambles. Like it was bizarre when he hit this electric chair, I believe is what they call it. You know, to use it as a sweep with lockdown and that place just erupted.
Really?
I mean, just erupted.
Well, and that's always good to see that there's a knowledgeable crowd.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You always hate when, if there is a stall,
yeah.
Boo!
Well, and anybody going to that event, I would
right,
assume
yeah.
have to be some pretty big jiu-jitsu
let's hope
heads.
So.
And,
yeah.
And, but that they, it was.
Now, do you want to see a third match? That I read that yeah. a couple people were like, third match, and I
yeah.
was like,
yeah. Well, I mean,
my thing is, how old are they now? They're 48.
Gracie's 48, and I think Bravo's 43.
I mean, when you said that, I actually got really surprised that Eddie Bravo's that old.
Yeah,
I thought he was younger
yeah.
than that. But
and they were saying, you know, both were in the best shape of their life. I mean, Eddie doesn't look a day older.
Yeah,
he looks like he's 10.
Yeah,
you know, Gracie's got some years on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he definitely looks like he's.
If they do it again, I would hope it's in the next few months.
Yeah, yeah. They should just do it again tomorrow.
Right. You know, like, well, not another. What was the first match? 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Well,
they're gonna be 68.
<You're right. laughs> Let's not wait 10 years. If you guys do it around, you know, this time next year,
yeah.
I think that's what they should do. Also on that card, what made news, at least from what I read, is Vinny Magalesh had to pull mm-hmm. out because of his staph infection.
Yeah, there's a picture online of
my God.
He has his staph infection is in the same spot that Kevin Randleman
mm-hmm.
had his.
That's the worst one
many,
I've ever
many
seen.
Years ago.
Kevin Randleman's one?
He had that big hole under his armpit. And that's where looked like Vinny's was too from the picture. And it's staff's bad.
Have you ever got staph infection from rolling or anything?
I had it in high school from wrestling, but
mm-hmm.
I don't. If I've had it, it hasn't
got
hasn't,
to that point.
Hasn't got to that point.
Jesus.
But you know, it's staph's one of those things that it's always going to be a part of anytime you sweat on mats and have.
Gotta
you know,
be clean.
Even as you can clean those mats as much as you want, you know, it's if you have a little cut, you know, you have a cut, an ingrown hair, whatever it is, you know, staph, you have a high likelihood of getting staph if you're putting that much mat time
mm-hmm.
in like those guys are.
It's just
inevitable. I don't think you would talk to a wrestler or a pro fighter that hasn't encountered staff in some degree,
some kind of way. Let's hope to God never in the Kevin Randleman way. But
oh yeah, no, that's geez, that I mean, was... and staff can kill you. People die all the time from staph infection.
Really?
Yeah, all yeah. the time.
I mean,
all
I knew it could get to where you know it was
yeah.
really horrible, but I guess I never realized
we
it
had a in
death.
High school.
Jesus.
I played football and we had a staph outbreak. I guess from the locker room or the equipment, whatever. We had to have like a. I don't know what they call it. They like bring this bomb in the locker room, like kills it, or I don't know what it does. Like we couldn't go, like fumigated it. Like,
right.
We couldn't go in there for a week, and it's like, yeah, your stuff's gonna have white powder on it because we're trying to kill that staph infection that everybody's got. Oh, shit.
Jesus. But yeah, Vinny Magalesh got the staff, wasn't able to compete.
He got the staff.
Got the staff. What I wonder now is, you know, Rance talked about it. The card, the Titan card was going to be in Oklahoma. It's moved to Kansas City. They have named Vinny Magalesh versus Jason Brills as the main event for that card. I wonder with the
right.
staff if he continues to train for that fight or maybe they try to find a replacement, but.
Yeah, I don't know. That's tricky because.
That's a great fight in
oh,
my
yeah.
opinion too. I think we've talked about this before, but man. That's something that I definitely want to see because Jason Brills is a guy who I don't think he'll ever finish a fight, which is so horrible to say. I don't think he has the style to finish fights, but man, he's such just a grinder and he beats top level guys. Like, I went to UFC 116 in Vegas a few years ago, and he fought Little Nogueira, and they said he lost, but I think he won. And for anyone who who says I competed at the highest level against a Nogueira in anything as far as combat related, I think is impressive. And to even beat him is amazing. So that's a very high level. I think that's the most high level fight between two guys that Titans ever put on.
I would say so. Yeah, I think that'd be.
You know, because there's people now that have developed into world-class guys. I'm thinking of like a James Krause, you know what I mean? But at the time when he fought on those Titan cards, he was the regional powerhouse now.
Certainly.
You know what I mean? So, but right now, man, I think a win for either of those guys, depending on how it is,
that'd
get them into the UFC.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's those are guys who are, you know, on the cusp and and need good marquee wins like that to
That's a good card, too, because you got Vinny versus Jason Brills. You got Jeff Curran on the card.
Curran is not on the card. Oh yeah. Curran had to pull out.
Yeah, Curran got hurt.
William Joplin versus Wale Watson now.
That's
which
what
is
it
awesome.
Was. Yeah.
I love that fight.
Joplin.
Jop's going to be on Titan, man. I'm so excited for him. He's on a 7 or 8 fight win streak, just tearing people up.
Yeah.
And he's going to get another win and keep on pushing. It's going to be a good fight, man. That guy's good.
He's another guy like Jason Brills where and this is no offense at all.
Right.
But I don't think he'll ever knock anyone out or catch anyone in a crazy submission. But, man, he's going to grind you.
Man,
he's going to beat your ass. Or if you're going to try to beat his ass, you're going to have to throw everything at him.
If you're trying to hurt him, you better pack a lunch. That dude, I tell people all the time, his body is just hard.
Yeah.
He has hard bones. like grappling with him, like striking with him, hitting him is miserable.
Yeah, and
his bones hurt.
You had mentioned, I think it's an 8-fight win streak.
Yeah.
I mean, to fight someone already that is tough as shit and that kind of style, and now he has probably
confidence, crazy
the
confidence.
Most confidence he's ever had in his career. It's gonna be a hard fight for
man,
Mr. Watson.
You gotta understand that dude,
Wale
Joplin,
Watson, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Joplin had 40 amateur fights, and he's got 20 plus pro fights. This is a dude in his amateur fights. He fought Kevin Kroom 3 times. He fought I think he fought Bobby as a pro.
Bobby Cooper,
as a pro. Fought Aaron Darrow. Fought Eric Marriott. And then he fought Ramon Barber, who's nasty, nasty, nasty. He fought Pablo Garza, who is in the UFC. I mean, he's fought a lot.
And never been finished.
Not as a pro. I think, and he'd probably kill me if I said this, but
I think
Kevin Kroom knocked him out with a slam.
I'm going to say, if you're listening, I don't think you've ever been finished.
Yeah.
Because I don't want him to kill me.
I know he doesn't like that, but I think Kevin Kroom knocked him out with a slam. And maybe Marriott, I don't know. He's just the moral
still,
of the story
as a pro,
he is he's tough.
God, he's a tough, tough guy. And I think this will be his first Titan fight, so
yeah, this is his debut. He's a Titan newcomer.
Oh Jesus! He's
a Titan newcomer. He's had 60 fights.
Yeah, what a newcomer! You idiot. God.
Did we get any emails this week?
We did. Let's get into these emails. All right, so we got one.
Yes,
I said these. It's one. All right, so here's the question.
Who's it from?
It is from. Should I say the full name?
Michael Admire.
There it is. Okay. I didn't know if we wanted to like just put the listeners out there like that. So
no,
I was just going
to
say
shout out to Michael Admire. Michael Admire's the guy.
All right. So this is what Michael has to say. If you could be in a ring with someone in your past or present, who would it be and why?
Is that like if I had to fight somebody?
I think that's what he means. I don't, you know, because if I could stand in the ring with anyone.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's really a lot of options.
Yeah, give me Kate Upton.
Can we go eat? Why do we got to stand in the ring? I always have, and I still do, want to fight Spencer Pratt.
Oh,
because he's one of those guys who's supposed to be like he's like a purple belt under Kevin Casey or something. I don't know what his deal is.
I forgot about that.
And he's
guy.
Like a black belt and Aikido or some shit.
Spencer
Pratt. I've been trying to get Joe, trying to get Joe to set that up.
Oh my God!
We can't get a hold of him. We can't get a hold of Spencer.
Did you ever punk him?
People.
Did you punk him when he was in Kansas City? When
no,
Kevin Casey?
I wasn't there. I wish I would have.
I saw him there.
I'd have called him out at the show. I just hate his face. Obviously I've never met him. Right. I know him from that stupid show that got him rich for no reason.
He was at the Strike Force show. I think that was 2010.
He got punked out by somebody.
Yeah, and I don't remember. That's what I was going to bring up, but I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, I wish
but
it was
he
me.
Was acting. Everyone was telling me that he was acting like a dick, and then I can't. It was a fighter, and if you guys know, tweet us at KC Split Decision.
Please do.
But someone punked him out, and I remember everyone like universally was like, "Yes,
yeah, like everybody hates him.
Everyone,
and
hates
him. I do like for all I know, like he might train." He might train jiu-jitsu 10 days a week.
Right.
You know, like 10 days a week.
10 times a
10
week.
10 times a week. I don't know, but he's still a poser to me.
Yeah.
Because he was on TV, like.
Joe
just,
Wooster,
like,
set that up.
Dude, Wooster, if you're listening, set that up. I'll grapple him. I tweeted Joe today and asked if he could get me on, Metamorphosis 4 for the next event, and he didn't think that he could. So if we could set that up, I'll do it.
KCFA.
I'll do it on KCFA.
Yeah.
I'll sell a shitload of tickets. I bet Spencer Pratt could sell a few tickets.
God, that was a great. I'm almost embarrassed now to say mine because yours was so good.
I wanted to fight him forever.
Oh man, I don't know. I always said, and this is totally punking this guy out, and I don't mean it because he's been in the sport and I have not. But I always said Billy Thomas.
Thomas, dude, that's a good fight. I like that. You should fight him.
I would always say Billy Thomas.
I bet you'd be down.
I know he'd be down, but. I don't know. If it's someone, I'll go famous with kind of your theme.
Right.
Just because it would be intriguing, I would say CM Punk, the pro wrestler
okay.
CM Punk.
Okay.
He's actually, like, he would probably kick my ass.
Right.
He's a blue belt under Henner Gracie and is a huge fan, but I just think, you know, it'd be cool.
How do you see that fight going?
Oh, he'd probably choke me out or something. I mean, dude, I would.
Here's the worst thing that would happen is I fight Spencer Pratt. He just sleeps me.
Right.
Like he just puts me to bed, and I'm just like, oh God. Like,
yeah. See, if I ever
it'd be the worst thing ever.
Yeah. If I ever fought, if I ever fought in general, but if it was someone like CM Punk, where all the hype and everything, and I think I might get my ass kicked, I'm just gonna run and just hope for the best. And if something bad happens, I'm gonna dive my head into a guillotine. Like, no, take this. Like,
neck up.
Yeah. Oh,
take it.
Yeah, he got me.
There'd be nothing worse than having to go to the gym after getting beat by Spencer Pratt. Like,
right.
I just never hear the end of it.
Yeah.
I'd probably just never go back.
That is a great call. All right. And Michael also has to say, and this is to you, not to me. Do you feel like, do you feel like a trendsetter with the comb over beard look?
I'm actually so glad that I'm so glad that he asked that question, and because I was gonna go off on it like a random story, from last night, but
yeah, go into it.
So, for the listeners, I had real short hair for years and years and years, 10 years. Just grew my hair out about 6 months ago, and it's really been well received, and
you look good.
Thanks, and things are going well. But last night, I was at a local watering hole, I believe that is what they call them, and it was getting to the point in the night where I believe they say beggars can't be choosers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was getting a little late in the night.
My favorite time of the night.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm talking to this young lady. She's probably like a C cup, maybe.
Okay. All right.
And that's terrible. Anyway, and I'm just schmoozing, mm-hmm. I'm just, telling her all the things that she doesn't want to hear. And I go, because I always ask people this, I go, do you find me attractive? Because, I just want to, I need to know if I'm wasting my time.
Right.
Let's go ahead.
Will
and
this lead to anything?
Yeah, let's just go ahead, because if you don't find me attractive, I'm not going to talk to you, because mm-hmm. it doesn't make any sense. And she says, without missing a beat, and I respected it so hard, she goes, no, not really. And I go, that's great. Like, I think that's awesome. Because you could have lied to me and I would have had all this delusional.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I go, that's great. What do you not like about me? And she goes, I don't like your hair. And
what?
I go, what?
What?
And yeah. I go, I've only, she was like, it's just like, it, I just hate it. And I'm just like, okay, because like I'm like kind of proud of it. Like I mm-hmm. think it actually, I haven't had long hair in 10 years. I think it kind of looks good.
I think it looks great.
I got like, you know, for you guys who've never seen me, like I got like a little comb over thing going, right. with, like a little beard.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think
just,
it's a good 1-2 punch.
She just like,
well, she was stupid.
She
then.
Put me to bed, and I just yeah. went. I was so sad. I text Anthony. I was with Anthony. I text him. Dan goes, I go, what was up with that those girls? Because there was two. They were both. They both thought that they both did not like my hair.
Well, they're just stupid.
And I go, what is wrong? What was
no, nothing's wrong with you.
Why is everyone attacking my hair last night?
Everyone, I think everyone was going at like. I think everyone's gave you a pluses. Correct.
It's been well received.
But now you got this guy Michael, and now those two girls.
Michael.
Well, Michael may just be jealous.
He has a great come over.
Okay,
like,
so
I'm trying to mirror my come over okay. after his.
So now he's starting to see competition. Maybe?
I think he is probably starting to feel the heat from
okay.
my come over.
All right, Michael. Well, let us know what you think about that whole little...
Mike, I doubt you listen to this, but if you do, thanks for the question.
And he also says, when will you come visit your friend in Des Moines?
Man, I want to get to Des Moines really soon. I've been. Michael is a sports reporter up in Des Moines.
Does he cover the sport of MMA?
He does. He did good. A really good. You should watch it. I'll find you a link. He did a really, really cool piece on Jeremy Stevens.
Yeah.
Really cool piece.
Good.
So he does. He's a good follow on Twitter for sports information. He'll tweet out if there's any Iowa guys fighting in the mm-hmm. UFC or anything like that for people to watch. So he does a good job, and he's a little bit of a fan, at least. So.
I always respect the sports reporters who do cover the sport because
right.
it's so easy to just be like, you know what I'm covering? The Big Four, and that's it. And
yeah.
I'm a sports reporter. Well, no,
yeah.
you're not. There's so many other sports out there. So I always respect any sports reporter that gives
yeah.
combat sports, even boxing. If
right.
you give combat sports just a 20-second thing on your 2-minute
yeah.
broadcast, awesome.
Well, he's a guy who, you know, he made a good point. He was like, you know, my thing is – I'm gonna go to wherever the story is,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I told him like, you know, there's so many amazing stories in the sport of MMA, you
especially
know,
Iowa,
and you know,
oh my
all
God.
Those legends up there. And the Jeremy Stevens piece was
I'll have to check
you
that
know,
out.
That guy's been through a lot of turmoil and
oh,
everything.
Yeah.
And it was leading up to his, I think it was his fight against
Dos Anjos.
Maybe, yeah.
I just made that.
No,
up.
No. This was more recently. I don't know. Did he fight Cerrone not too long ago?
I think so.
Like maybe. I don't know. Who knows? But
we'll
great
up.
Story nonetheless.
Good. But yeah, we got an email. So credit to that
credit
guy.
Credit to my friends.
Yeah, your friends. Yeah, my friends don't give a shit. I've been asking them for 2 weeks now. Hey, please.
Yeah.
And they're like, nah, we're good.
Yeah.
So
they're like, oh yeah, we'll do that. And
mm-hmm.
it's like we get here, no emails.
Right. Well, we got one. So hey, what is this? 3 weeks in a row now?
We're on like an email
hot streak. Yeah.
We'll
keep it going. Yeah. We'll keep it going.
Unlike my night last night, not a hot streak.
Yeah. Do you know what my night was?
What'd you do?
I just watched old fights and pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So
sounds like a much better than mine.
I was in bed by 10:30.
Sounds like a much cheaper alternative to
it. Was very cheap.
Yeah.
It was very cheap, but it wasn't that fun. Oh, the stories. We're cool. We're so cool
yeah.
here.
Like, we always trail off at the
yeah.
end. Like, you know that people that are listening, they're just like, this is so retarded.
This is the worst part
like,
of the show.
Yeah, like,
you know, we started off so,
yeah,
we started off so hot.
We start off with rants, like
rants,
just drops knowledge.
Talking
like,
all this Dr. Cool
gets,
stuff.
Gets down. And then
now,
it's like, and then we had a really good conversation. Then we just
yeah,
trail off to like, yeah, and I didn't really do anything
so,
last night.
Yeah, you know, so, but to recap the show, I guess, we
yeah.
talked to rants about
the fight doc.
The fight doc. I mean, 45 events a year. I think I do a lot of events. I do probably 10.
I always talk to people about you know, on the local scene in the Midwest. There's just certain people's names who hold weight and who everybody knows
mm-hmm.
and likes and respects. And Rance is a guy who has been doing it for a really, really long time. And everybody likes him. He's such a great guy.
And
does such a great job,
yeah.
you know.
Because
you've worked with him.
I've worked with him, I would say, the majority of the events
shows
I've worked.
Done,
yeah.
Right.
And it always feels like if for me, if Martin, Rance, and, well, I was going to say mainly those two guys. If those two guys are a part of an event,
right.
I'm like, whatever happens, I know we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Those two guys are just
veterans.
Just the veterans and just the best at what they do.
Certainly.
And Rance is great. I was going to give him a hard time, though. He does show up late.
He's a doctor.
Yeah, and, but man,
they're never on time anymore.
And he knocks it out with all the work he has to do.
He's got the process down.
Right,
he's done it a few times.
Yeah, like the weight cut.
Yeah, he's right. Exactly.
All
right.
Well, are we supposed to end this? I guess.
Yeah.
You
want to
end
this?
All right. Let me.
Hey guys, send some damn emails.
Mm-hmm.
Be adults.
Be an adult.
Be a goddamn adult.
Yeah. Next week.
What are we doing next week?
We're going to be talking MMA.
Let's have James Krause on next week.
Yes!
Actually, let's have Tim Elliott on because his fight's coming up.
Let's have both of them on.
We'll just do like a mega show.
Yeah, a mega show.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure something out.
Yes, that'd be great. All right. So for me, T-Mac, and the co-host Turner, this is the Split Decision. Again, follow us if you are not on @KC Split Decision.
On Twitter.
And we'll talk to you next week.
See ya!